We're exploring goat yoga here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. I've appreciated having a yoga practice for about 15 years, but never in the company of goats. So this will be a learning experience. Do I want to hold side plank, shake in crow pose, or nuzzle with a goat on my mat instead? Come on, goat wins, always. Have you ever practiced yoga with goats meandering around the mats? What was that experience like? Do you think goats and yoga is a passing trend? 800-642-1234. Clara Hedrick is a founder of LeClaire Family Creamery in Malone, Wisconsin. She's a goat handler for their goat yoga classes. Clara, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. So why should we incorporate goats into the ancient practice of yoga?
Today's society is far removed from our farm animals and from animals in general. And it offers our people that are participating in the yoga an opportunity to interact with an animal. And the goat is just perfect because it's very inquisitive and it's very calming. If you stop and think about, I bring in the baby goats that are 7 to 10 days of age. So everybody loves a baby. So the size is non-threatening and they're just nothing but adorable. And if you look at the face of a goat, it is always smiling. So it just makes people happy. And so as they're doing their yoga, you know, they have an animal that's very, like I said, calming and just makes them smile.
Well, walk us through what a goat practice is like at your creamery. What can we expect?
When you come, I'm going to welcome you to LeClaire Family Creamery. And then I have been a high school agriculture teacher for 39 years. And so education is the utmost importance to me. And I think people are very interested in learning new things. And so what I always do is I talk a little bit about the similarities between the human baby and the goat baby. And so I will give you a little bit of an education. The goat baby on an average is going to be 7 pounds when it's born. Our human baby is about 7.5 pounds when it's born. If you look at human moms and goat moms, they're about the same in size, about 100 to 150-ish pounds. When that baby is born, the human mom has those hands and fingers that she can help that baby out with and et cetera and care for that baby. And if you think about the goat mom, she has her legs and her hooves. So that baby is really needs to be self-sufficient. So one of the things when it's born, it's going to be up and walking within 30 minutes.
Wow.
And then it has that natural suckling instinct so that it's looking for its nourishment. And so that's one of the things that I encourage folks, to understand is that baby is naturally going to have that suckling instinct and that it's not necessarily hungry. It's just inquisitive. And like the human child has those fingers and is always touching things, that goat baby, its lips are its fingers. And so it's going to naturally want to touch things. And so I ask that that the people don't let them suckle on their hands because, as we know, we have a lot of good bacteria in our hands, as well as other kinds of bacteria in our hands. And so, the babies then, our yoga instructor, Lorelei, starts our yoga out. And then about 15 minutes later, I show up with the stars of our show. And I bring them out in little tubs on a wagon. And then I place them amongst the people. And then my job is basically I keep the baby goats, intermingled within the folks. We don't have any fences up or anything of the sort. We have a beautiful courtyard surrounded by beautiful landscaping. And so we're outdoors on the grass. And so you enjoy, nature at its finest, along with a little baby goat, just walking about. And then, they're all different. If you think about personalities of people and children, the goats are the same way. Some just love to run and bounce. others love to, just walk up to them. And, every so often they have one that's just a cuddler. And so they'll just cuddle up on their mat and just lay down there right next to them. When we're about 15 minutes before the end of the class, we stop. And then you have a chance to pick the goats up, pet the goats, take pictures with the goats. Because up until that time, I ask that folks just let them do what they want to do. And because they're babies, once in a while, they will climb up, but not real often. You know, they're more apt to, just stay close. And then the yoga instructor is going to do the exercises on the ground, things that will keep them about the same height and stuff. So.
Oh, wow. It sounds like so much fun and very playful into a practice that is so sacred. We're talking with Clara Hedrich, who is with LeClaire Family Creamery in Malone, Wisconsin, goat handler for their goat yoga classes that are underway. You can join in. Have you ever done yoga with goats? What was that experience like? Did it change your yoga practice? 800-642-1234. Clara, do you think that there are therapeutic aspects or, mental benefits of having these young goats around?
Very much so, because, if you think about it, some people are they're just really not into, shall we say, exercise, and they're kind of intimidated by the idea of going to a yoga class. And so, that's one of the first things when people come, they look Lorelei in the eye and they say, "I'm sorry, but we're really not here for yoga. We're here for the goat." And so, and she's well aware of that. And so she's fine, absolutely fine with that. And every so often you'll catch her, she'll start laughing and she said, "I'm sorry. I was watching the goat and I forgot where I'm at in my routine." And then, so then she'll, flip back into her routine and the likes. And so they bring that sense of happiness. And then what we find is that folks will go, "Oh my gosh, I can actually do yoga. I really actually like this." And so the goat has brought them to an exercise that they normally wouldn't have never ever thought they would go or anything. And then every so often I have somebody that says, "Oh, because of my knees, because of my hips or, something, I can't get down on the ground." And I say, "Oh, don't worry about that. We have chairs here on the patio. Grab a chair, bring it out, sit on the chair and just pretend you're doing the yoga and enjoy the goats." And so just recently we had somebody that was there, and she brought her chair over and she was sitting, and before you know it, she's on the ground because she wanted to interact with those goats. And so those goats will bring that out in people, where they just want to, and they focus on the goat and they forget about some of their other issues and things. And so it really, and what I always find, and it's just heartwarming, for me, at least, as the folks are leaving, I always thank them for coming. And they say, "Oh, geez, thanks so much for this opportunity. This was wonderful. We had the best time." And, I've had several folks, go, "This was the best day of my life."
Oh, my goodness.
Like, "Oh, my gosh." it's so special, because it, like I said, they watch the, the little goat jump around and, just come by them and, you can see they're smiling and they're just happy and, and the people are laughing. And so it's just, there's a lot of, shall we say, hidden therapy in
sure.
doing goat yoga.
Yeah.
That people just don't realize, but, you're getting people out, you're getting them to exercise, you're getting them to, learn more about, the animal in general, because that's the other comment I get, because, folks can ask questions about, goat husbandry and just the goats in general, or about our cheese or, whatever they have questions about. And they always, one of their comments is, "I've learned so much today, about this." And so, it's kind of a double-edged, benefit, shall we say, besides the exercise, the therapy, the education. So we kind of try to, roll that all in one. And being a, former high school teacher, one of the things that you always do, because you're always dealing with clients that are not that interested in learning, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of sneak in through the back door and without them realizing, "Hey, I know a lot of stuff. I got a lot of information today." So.
We have Clara Hedrick, who is a goat yoga handler at her Eastern Wisconsin Creamery in Fond du Lac County. Are you a yoga enthusiast? What do you think of goats in the mix? Have you ever practiced yoga with a cat in the room? My cat is always walking around under me when I practice yoga. What do you think of goat yoga? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Clara Hedrick here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about adorable goats and the goat yoga craze here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A Wisconsin creamery is embracing it with baby goats and yoga. Are you ready to add some goat antics to your downward-facing dog? What about closing your eyes and melting into Shavasana at the end of practice? And there's a goat nuzzling your face. Have you experienced goat yoga? Join in 800-642-1234. Clara Hedrick facilitates goat yoga at her creamery in Malone, Wisconsin, stays with us for about 9 more minutes. So, Clara, I'm wondering, you know, when did you start goat yoga? And was there a learning curve, like in those first classes, to get your goats to kind of incorporate into those classes?
Yoga about 5 years ago. And we've been doing it every Saturday from June through the end of September. We'll run two sessions on our busiest part of our season, then one session. And the goat is just, I always say kids and kids, and that's what a baby goat is known as, are just perfect together. They are a very loving, inquisitive animal. So it's not like you have to, train this goat to like to be by people. They just naturally want to do that. They love to play with people. So there's not, we didn't have to do anything in particular, to get that goat to interact with the people. I bring new baby goats in every week. So it's a brand new experience for those goats every week. And you would think that I had those goats trained, to be a part of that event. And we also, we don't only offer goat yoga for adults. We also offer goat yoga for children. And so we have a separate instructor who does more of the, shall we say, playful yoga. Instead of using the yoga terms, she talks about, being an animal's trunk or, waving the elephant trunk or,
growing
something
into
of that.
A tree. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes. And then, so for them, we do the yoga first, because usually what I find is as soon as the goats come out, the instructor becomes invisible. And so, to focus on, the exercise portion of it for the children, we do the yoga first. And then when the goats come out, then we just let the children interact with the goats because that works the best.
We've seen pictures online of these baby goats standing on people's backs in tabletop position. Does that really happen?
It depends on the situation. I was doing an event off-site, and it was kind of hilarious. This one goat was just really into it, and what that goat did is it started by the person at the far end and walked across each person's back. it was just like it was timed or was programmed to do that. But usually, once in a while, I will have them climb. Where they will climb up onto people, onto their backs. But it's not a real common kind of thing because of the age of the goat that I use. If I would use one that's a little bit older, it probably would do well. But we're always very concerned about, obviously the folks that are doing the yoga and obviously, the animals. So, that's why I've chosen that age because, like I said, they're... they just melt your heart. They're just fun to be around.
Well, goats, they love treats. And I'm just wondering, we often like to feed goats from our hands. Do you allow any type of treats at the end of class or anything like that?
At that age, they are only going to be drinking milk.
Okay.
They will not do anything. You know, like somebody, like a child many times would like to breaks off a blade of grass and wants to feed that to the goat. Well, the goat might, you know, with its lips feel it and stuff, but it will not eat it because its stomach is not ready to go. It takes about 3 weeks for the stomach to get enough bacteria in it, rumen bacteria, for it to start digesting any kind of solid feeds and the likes. Mm-hmm. So that's why we stay strictly with the milk. And we do not bring out product for them to feed and the likes. It's primarily for the health of our animals, because that's always our first concern.
We're talking with Clara Hedrick, who's founder of Le Claire Family Creamery in Malone, a goat handler for their goat yoga classes, which have been going on for years. You can join in. Do you think goats and yoga is a really good mix? Have you taken up yoga in the pandemic? What have you learned? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You know, Claire, with the pandemic, your classes are outdoors. Many yoga classes have shifted online. What has happened with goat yoga in these times?
We've pretty much continued as is, because, you know, needless to say, doing goat yoga online just isn't the same.
Isn't the same, yeah.
And so we basically social distance. We're outdoors and, you know, mask when it was at its height, you know, so following all the guidelines and worked out really well. And it really, like I said, you know, we're outside. Fire, you know, social distance. So it worked out really well.
So when your goats aren't frolicking around yoga class, what else do they do at your creamery? What is a goat's life like at your creamery?
On site, we have primarily our yearlings. So these would be the goats that would be getting ready to produce offspring. And so when they're just a few weeks away from actually having their kids, then they're transported to our milking facility. And so basically they're born at the milking facility. They will be, raised at a kid raising facility. And then we've actually specialized in the raising of our animals. And if you think about the dairy cow world, where you have your milking herd, you've got your heifer raising facility, your calf raising facility. And that's pretty much what we've done with our goat facility.
Well, let's take a call now. Shanna is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Shanna.
Hi, guys. I love that you're talking about this topic. I do goat yoga all the time. My yoga instructor with MKE Yoga Social in Milwaukee, she hosts events not at a creamery, but the goats come to her. So we do it in places like Captain Paps Pilot House, Best Place Paps, various parks and things. And it's kind of the same format that you described, where we're doing about 15 to 20 minutes of yoga, then the goats get released and they just come and play with everybody, buckle on our zippers, on our little jackets. And it's an amazing experience. It really is. And you're right about that. When they're a little tiny bit older, I think we always do ours with dwarf goats. They do like to stand on your back when you're doing, you know, tabletop and downward dog. So it's a really awesome experience. It just kind of changes your whole mentality when you're incorporating exercise and nature together like that.
Oh, well said, Shanna. Thank you for sharing your experience with us. And I bet that, Clara, you really appreciate that as well.
Oh, yes, most definitely. I'm glad you enjoy it.
Shanna, do you think that this will continue on? Do you find that your yoga community is really embracing this?
Oh, yeah. All the events that are held down here are sold out very quickly. Full classes, we do it in large spaces so everybody can still socially distance. And yeah, it's growing very quickly in popularity.
Oh, that's so great. Thanks for calling in. Clara, do you think goat yoga is here to stay, Clara?
I most definitely, because, and the reason I say that is as I've mentioned earlier, we used to have somebody that we knew that lived on a farm or that had animals, And we're generations removed from that now. Most folks don't know of anybody, don't have that opportunity. And so this allows that opportunity for them to interact with an animal. And they absolutely adore it and love it. Because we do, besides the goat yoga, we do at least once a month have our baby goats available for people to pet. Actually, we're starting Pet and Play in September. And for special events, we will have, you know, Santa's littlest reindeer. We will have Cupid for Valentine's Day, you know, the leprechauns for St. Patrick's Day, the patriotic ones, you know, for the like the 4th of July, back to school, kids in backpacks back to school. So if you brought in your backpack, you could get your picture with the goat, you know, all sorts of fun things.
You know who your stars are. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Clara Hedrick, founder of LeClaire Family Creamery, goat handler for the goat yoga classes and more. We have a link, by the way, to the creamery at WPR.org/mornings. It is the morning show. I'm Kay Darcher Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with the name origin for a corner of the state.
As people enter the driftless area of southwestern Wisconsin, they're transported from a relatively flat region to a sudden maze of rolling hills. Roads wind up the sides of bluffs and then back down to the valleys below. Its beauty is without question. But where does the name Driftless come from? That's a question sent to WPR's Wisconsin Project. WPR's Jonah Balekas hit the winding roads to find the answer for us.
Water flows through a stream in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve in Vernon County. Sandstone and limestone rock appear on a bluffside with white pine and yellow birch trees. I'm off a hiking trail after wading through wildflowers and other native plant life. While living in Madison, Claire Holland scratched her itch to explore by driving west through the bluffs and valleys of the Driftless area. She asked Wisconsin where the name came from. I spoke with Colin Belby, professor and head of the Geography and Earth Science Department at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. He explains that driftless means the absence of glacial drift, hence driftless. If glaciers had passed through this part of the state, they would have left behind rock material that geologists could connect to other regions.
If you drive around to many parts of Wisconsin, you'll find, for instance, crystalline rocks. They're rocks that come from northern Wisconsin or even up into Canada that don't match the local sedimentary rock types that are maybe found in the southern part of Wisconsin or the southeastern part of Wisconsin. Well, so southwest Wisconsin has evidence of glacial drift, glacial erratics, or glacially deposited sediments on all sides of it. But there is no evidence of these glacial deposits within the driftless area.
So, what is the driftless area like? Back by the stream at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve and surrounded by chirping birds, I meet with Marcy West on a sunny afternoon. She's a member of the state's Natural Resources Board and ran the reserve for 24 years.
By my definition, it just feels very untouched, like we can see the hills and valleys and get into it, explore it, really look at the diversity of the plants and the birds, and just enjoy the quiet and solitude in some areas like this.
As she's a stone's throw away from the Kickapoo River, West says the river is by far her favorite part of the driftless area, especially when she's kayaking.
It just is such a gorgeous trip and an incredible way to see, again, those beautiful rock outcroppings and the huge pine trees and hemlocks hanging on to the rock outcroppings with the root systems, clear water, trout fishing, just the quiet and being able to see a variety of mosses and plants and birds in every season is definitely my favorite.
Belby, the UWL professor, also appreciates the area's diversity.
We have caves here. We have the big river, the Mississippi River. We have small streams. We have medium streams. It's just a really kind of diverse physical landscape that results in a very diverse kind of biological landscape. And also, I think, results in a very diverse cultural landscape. I think all those things are really, really tied together.
Whether it's the Baraboo Range with hills that cover thousands of acres in Sauk and Columbia counties, or the Mississippi River that separates Wisconsin and Minnesota, or Wildcat Mountain towering over the Kickapoo River in Vernon County, or Perot State Park, found at the confluence of the Mississippi and Trempealeau Rivers. Wisconsinites who have never seen the Driftless area can hop in their cars and chart a path through the southwestern part of the state that the last glaciers never did.
WPR's Jonah Balekas brought us that story on where Wisconsin's Driftless area got its name from. And that story idea came to us from an audience member as part of WPR's Wisconsin Project. Submit your question and we might answer it in a future Wisconsin Life segment. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to PBS Wisconsin's new season of the Wisconsin Life series. Premieres tomorrow evening at 7, and we get an inside look at the human interest stories they explore and the places they take us in this 9th season. Join in on Wisconsin Life Ideas, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kelly Saran is here, series producer. Kelly, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Good morning. And Angela Fitzgerald, host of Wisconsin Life on PBS Wisconsin. Angela, welcome back as well.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Angela, let's start with you. Can you make a map in our mind's eye? Where around the state does this new season take us?
Oh, wow. So we traveled quite a few places this season, which was great because we're coming out of the pandemic. So we're less restricted in how we can film, which is amazing. And so a couple places that we went to Wausau for the Hmong Wausau Festival. We spent some time in Lodi helping to build a boardwalk with the Ice Age Trail Alliance. Went to a air show in Oshkosh. Mm-hmm. I learned how to curl in Stevens Point. Spent some time in Milton in the last certified underground railroad station in Wisconsin. And last but not least, and Kelly can help me out with the exact location of the wildlife rehab center that we visited in Pine View.
Wow. And yeah, Kelly, so as you chart out where to take the season, what considerations do you make?
So we make a lot of considerations on trying to head out to as many places as possible. And we really look at where have we not been before? Where are suggestions that maybe people have written in and let us know this is a really cool destination? We love to do something with animals. We love to get Angela active. But really, we're trying to hit every corner of the state as possible because, as you know, stories are everywhere and Wisconsin is full of them. And it's just our job to try to collect as many as we can.
I would imagine, too, you're always learning something new each season, something you didn't know about Wisconsin. And I think that would be so cool.
It is cool. And even for me, I mean, Angela tried curling, but I also got a chance to try. And I was like, oh, this is going to be so easy. It wasn't easy. It was really hard. And now when I look at people who curl, I think, wow, you guys are really amazing and strong. So it is amazing. I get surprised every year. And, you know, some people would say, do you run out of ideas? We definitely don't. And it just keeps building the history, the amazing people who are doing work to kind of make our state better. It's quite amazing.
Well, we're going to dig into some of these stories now. Angela, you visited this equine therapy in Waukesha. It's a nonprofit for equine therapy for kids and families with special needs. And we're going to hear just a bit of your conversation with the co-founder, Veronica Sosa, about the effects of equine therapy.
Our bodies are meant to be moving, and the horse can kind of replicate that feeling. And one of the things that it does, primarily neurologically, is it stimulates the language centers of the brain, which is one of the reasons that it's so powerful for people who have different types of developmental disabilities, speech and language delays, even Alzheimer's.
Even Alzheimer's. I mean, it sounds, Angela, like a therapy that can have a wide-ranging impact. What did you take away?
Exactly that. I did not necessarily anticipate that horses and equine therapy as a whole would, A, be so impactful, but I appreciate that they created a space that was so accessible to communities that might not normally have access to horses or farms where they could engage with horses in that way. So it was really incredible to see. And especially too, because we were later able to connect with some families who had brought their kids there to receive therapy. So to see that in person too was amazing.
What were the families like? I mean, what had they experienced in doing this therapy?
Well, there was one parent that we spoke with that had been bringing her child to Life Striders for a while. And she mentioned how it had really helped him. I believe when he first started with them, he was nonverbal, but it was really helping him to just build out those skills that he might have been a little bit delayed in developing by connecting with the horse in that way.
Mm. Kelly, I know this is a purely practical question, but were these horses okay with your camera crew? I'm just curious. Did you have to make any accommodations?
I think the biggest thing was just that you kind of read the room and you just know the biggest thing about Life Striders is safety. So we're always very cautious of that. We don't want to come too close. And especially when riders are on the horses, they work with the horses so often that they were able to guide us as well. But you always kind of just take it in stride. And if the horse needs time, then you kind of back off and you revisit if it's open. And yeah.
Well, Kelly, we're going to go to the next spot here and take to the air. One of the people featured is Major Zoe Davies, stationed at Truex Field, the Air National Guard base in Madison. And this is a dream job for Major Davies. And here she is talking about how much she enjoys flying.
It just looks mean. It's slick. It's fast. It's a supersonic aircraft. It is extremely tactical, and it's a 9G aircraft. I have an absolute blast flying it.
She says it's a 9G aircraft, so this is G-forces. How did she describe the G-force feeling or what it's like on her body?
I think she said it was like you get kicked back in your seat, but she loves it. Like, you can see the passion in her eyes of loving that. And what's nice about that piece too is we get to go up in the air with her as well. So it's kind of a must-see, like, to see something maybe you wouldn't necessarily see every day. But she also had a great pride kind of flying over her home state and seeing places that she kind of grew up and landscape that she knows and things like that. And she talked about flying over her mother's house and how much she loved it as well. So,
oh wow,
really exciting. Yeah.
So when she took you up, did she point things out? What did she tell you?
So the National Guard actually just took cameras up themselves as well, too. Uh-huh. But we were able to sit on the ground and kind of see the launch of the plane off of the field. And that was quite amazing to even just capture that. They're so fast. It's incredible.
Mm. I've often wondered how these fighter pilots make their bodies ready for this. I mean, I would imagine she has to do a lot of training, conditioning to be able to handle, you know, 9Gs.
Yeah, I think it really is. And I think it takes a certain type. And that's what I love about Wisconsin Life, too, is that we get to meet so many different people who get to do so many incredible things. Like, it's awesome.
We're getting an inside look at the new season of the Wisconsin Life series on PBS Wisconsin. We have the series producer Kelly Saran there and host Angela Fitzgerald join in on memorable moments from Wisconsin Life, what you think of the series, where you'd like them to take their cameras next in our state, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting a preview of the new season of the Wisconsin Life series, now in its 9th season, by the way, on PBS Wisconsin. New places to check out, new connections, stories of Wisconsinites that stick with us long after the half-hour show. Join in on how you think Wisconsin Life reflects the personality of our state, what they should highlight next, 800-642-1234. Wisconsin Life producer Kelly Saran is here, and series host Angela Fitzgerald. They stay with us. So, Angela, in your promo for the new season, I thought I glimpsed a split-second image of Curler, and now I'm coming to think that that was you.
That
and
was
like,
me,
I'm
so
putting this
curling.
All together. Okay, so how was the curling? Where did you go?
Well, so for curling, we were in Stevens Point with a curling club of individuals, actually, that were elderly, that this is what they do for fun. And so as Kelly mentioned earlier, it was much more intense than what it looks like, I think, just visually when you see people, they're kind of like gliding across the ice. It looks fun. It doesn't look too intense. It, like, an intense stretch was needed to get down to that position. So I felt it, like, after we did the shoot, I felt like I had done a pretty intense workout, but it was fun. I mean, it required that core and the stretch, like I mentioned, to stay upright on the ice and to have that position to really push that really heavy cement block, I think it was cement, across the ice. Mm-hmm. But and the technical pieces of it, I'm still understanding, but just the physicality of it, I definitely underestimated.
And you mentioned this was an older demographic partaking in the sport. Is that right?
Absolutely. And so that was great to see, and how several of them like mentioned that this is something that gets them social, it gets them out, it gets them moving. And it literally is a club that they do this on a regular basis inside this beautiful new facility that they've created.
Mm. Kelly, you know, I really leaned into curling during the Winter Olympics when we saw the superior curler, John Schuster, and just how much excitement there was about superior and curling. But now, as I understand, there is a rich heritage of curling in Wisconsin. What did you find out?
So there really is. And I think this curling, the Stevens Point Curling Club, has been around since, I believe, like the late 1950s. And what I really liked about it is they really talked about how it's intergenerational and how their kids, some of the people that we met, their kids have been curling with them as well. So even we had like parents and their sons and daughters with them. And then they were talking about kind of this revival, just like you said, like people really got into curling in the last year and how they've seen like youth really take on curling. And while we were there, even on one of our visits there, we got to see like very small group of kids trying curling. Like they're as big as the curling girls, you know, but it's like they're giving it a try, and it's this intergenerational thing that I think people are passing down and really having fun. And it's a sport you can do throughout the winter to keep active.
Well, no proper segue here, but this is now to insects. You visit this UW-Madison professor, Jennifer Angus, who uses insects and this Victorian-style influence to create these immersive artistic environments. And this is just so visually rich and stimulating. Let's hear from Angus describing her art.
When I had completed putting my pattern in insects upon the wall, I, of course, was hanging around the gallery, and people were putting their face up to the glass, and I could hear people saying, well, I see they put up a new wallpaper, but I don't see the art. And they walked in and walked up to the wall, and then literally I watched them take a step back as they realized that that pattern, that wallpaper, is made of insects.
Oh, and it's just so stunning, Kelly. What was it like to get up close to these pieces of artwork made out of insects?
I think what's exciting about that is like you get to see the artwork itself. And I love to like tease things that we want you to see on the radio within the show as well. But she really has like massive collections of art and kind of geometric patterns. So it's really interesting to look at that. But I think what's also interesting is kind of the behind the scenes of how does she preserve the bugs? How does she have to, she has to actually dry them out as well and kind of like put them in bins with a little bit of water, and then they become more flexible, and then she can adjust them and make them into these shapes that she needs for each of them. And also like kind of how she decided that insects were her medium of art, because she really wanted to like raise awareness how the insect population is dying. And this is one way to kind of get people to start talking about it as well. So it's really stunning. And again, a radio thing where we really want you to see it as well. And we want to tease it out.
Helps to see it. Yep. I was so struck by her saying, look, if you have problems with me using these insects as part of artwork, you really, it's a conversation starter here. We have to talk about the Amazon. We have to talk about our planet. And I think that to me was also a really wonderful acknowledgement about the connection between our climate and her art.
Yeah. And I think too, what I think is interesting is in the beginning of the piece, she talks about how people think, oh, these are painted insects. And they're not, like, they're vibrant like that. And just kind of the respect for seeing things that maybe we're not used to seeing, vibrant bugs and learning something new as well, is just something that we really like to open the door to.
Mm. Angela, what stood out to you?
Well, with this particular shoot, I wasn't there in person. So okay. I was doing the voiceover in the studio. But just that use of insects as an art medium is interesting to me. Like, that is something I'd never encountered before.
We're talking about this new season of Wisconsin Life. Starts on PBS Wisconsin tomorrow. And we have host Angela Fitzgerald and Kelly Saran, one of the show's producers. You can join in 800-642-1234. I guess in the area of artwork, Kelly, you talked with a visual artist, Leobub Suaco, born and raised in Mexico City. After he moved to Madison, starts experimenting with spray paint and acrylics, other mediums. So let's hear Suaco describe why his work is meaningful to him.
I found that by doing what I do, I somehow bring happiness to some people. That to me, it's awesome. Like, you doing what you do, it's making someone else happy. Like, it doesn't get any better than that, you know? So, yeah.
Oh, Leobub Suaco, Kelly, can you introduce us?
Sure. So he also goes by the name Triangulador. And if you're in the Madison area and you've ever seen kind of art spray painted on mattresses, that's that artist. And then murals around Madison as well, too. And he talks about how he kind of chose mattresses as a medium, as a way to do spray painting without maybe getting in trouble with the cops as well. So he will take old mattresses and kind of spray paint them and make beautiful works of art. And if you're in the Madison area, you can kind of see him around and people maybe have seen them and not known that he was the artist behind him. Mm-hmm. But he also does huge murals as well. And those can be seen throughout Wisconsin and the Madison area as well. But I think what's striking about him is kind of in the piece, he kind of encourages people to try something new and not be afraid of doing things. And I think that's a really big theme in Wisconsin Life and period that we've heard this season, especially, is just get out there. If you're interested in it, try it. And if it doesn't work, that's okay too, but get out there and try something new.
Don't be afraid to try. Angela, we only have a few moments left. What do you enjoy about hosting Wisconsin Life?
Well, I definitely appreciate being able to travel around with Kelly and the team. And just explore new places that I haven't necessarily heard of or that I've heard about but hadn't experienced directly for myself. So there was new, like the Milton House Museum, that historical landmark was a place that I literally have never heard of. So I was happy to go and to visit and to purchase a hoodie afterwards. That way I can promote that, hey, this is a historical landmark in our state that may be little known, as well as, like we mentioned, with curling and other experiences, being able to try something new. I like that. Oh. And Kelly understands I'm willing to try something at least like once.
At least once.
New has been fun as well.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much
for having us.
Angela Fitzgerald, host of Wisconsin Life on PBS Wisconsin, Kelly Saran, series producer. We have a link to the season at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.